Loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot. Julius.
He scores!
Anthony for three.
Bang! That one goes down and the game is tied.
Here's Durant moving on Tucker. He turns. He shoots. Yes!
Talking Knicks, Nets, and all things across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.
Welcome to Pick and Pod, the exclusive NBA podcast on WFUV Sports. I'm Ben Oppenheimer, along with my two co-hosts here. How are you guys doing, first off?
I'm doing great. The New York Knicks played today. I'm a big Knicks fan. A great rivalry we're going to preview in a little bit against the Miami Heat. We got some gorgeous weather here in New York as well. It's not very fallish, but I was missing summer, so I'm glad it came for a visit.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Can't complain. Only thing I can complain about are the Knicks so far. Weather's been good. Still rocking the Timberlands. It's that time of year. Got to get going.
Yeah. It's like an extended summer out there. I'm wearing shorts and a t-shirt. But let's get into these New York Knicks. You know, I had the privilege to travel up to Boston and see them face off against the Celtics, the defending NBA champions. And I was very disappointed by what I saw. They just did not look locked in out there, especially what's been a trend these past three games is the Knicks have shot under 33s a game, which is different from last year, as they were an offensive juggernaut last year and a great on defense. They were top 10, top 5 offense and defense. And right now it seems that the offense in particular is out of sorts. There's not an ideal amount of chemistry, especially after the trade this past September for Karl-Anthony Towns. And then the addition of Mikal Bridges as well. There's a lot of new pieces on this team, and it appears that they're struggling to find ways to space the floor and try to create a balanced offense. I mean, I saw it in Boston, and it's interesting because the Knicks actually didn't play that terrible in Boston. It's just Boston scored so much. It's Jason Tatum, the amount of threes he was dropping from anywhere on the court. It was just incredible. They're going to be the team to beat in the East, obviously. But then the Pacers game last Friday was a positive moment, an uplifting sign that, hey, it looks like this team is starting to gel. And then it seems it's one step forward, two steps back with what we saw versus the Cavs on Monday night when I was there. And so I want to hear your takes on this.
It's just crazy to me because after this Karl-Anthony Towns trade, I thought the offense was going to be the least of the Knicks' worries. I thought it was going to be the defense, especially with Mitchell Robinson going back down on the injured list until January and Precious Achiuwa going out as well. But the defense has been great. I'm so happy with how OG and Bridges are working on the corners together. I knew they'd like blend magically together. I just thought it would take a little bit of time. But to see the defense click right away, I know how important that is to Tom Thibodeau. So I'm happy to see that going well. But the offense is just a disaster. As you said, like, they're just not there right now. And obviously, I saw before the starting lines comparison from last season's opening day to this season's opening day, and only Brunson was the same. They had Hart on the bench, so it's just, it's a lot of changes right now. And even though a lot of the players on the Knicks were on the team, they were not in the starting five. So it's just, it's all new. You got to give it time. I was looking at the Cavs game. I didn't get a chance to watch it. I was watching some highlights, looking at the stats. But my big issue is the lack of three-pointers on this Knicks team. Obviously, with losing DiVincenzo, that was going to go down. He was your main guy for that. But I was hoping to see Josh Hart pull a little bit. Jalen Brunson, who tries to get everything, he just has not been able to get that in. The Cavs game, they went 3-for-28 from the three-point line, which is just unacceptable. And Karl-Anthony Towns' offense as well was not good at all. He only took 8 shots in the entire game. I really don't think that's going to be a trend that stays. I think he's watching the films and he's going to be able to bounce back from that tonight.
Yeah, I completely agree. One thing I've noticed is that there hasn't been much ball movement. It's been strictly iso ball. They've been running pick and rolls, and it's not how a Tom Thibodeau team is supposed to be run. I'm not saying that this is Tibbs' fault. Just in general, the Knicks have not been gelling together. They need to find how they can all work as one cohesive unit. The defense has been great. The offense is lacking. They need to find a way to be able to move the ball, get the ball in the high post, run the baselines with OG, keep Mikal Bridges on the wing. They need to find a way to get this team as a functioning ball movement, as a team with a functioning ball movement. This ISO ball isn't going to win you a championship. The defense we have will, but the ISO ball needs to quit. Ball movement is key. Look at how the Spurs won in the 2010s. Strict ball movement. I was watching the Warriors game last night. Their ball movement was great. That's one thing that this Knicks team needs to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty premature, but I'm almost having buyer's remorse from the moves made this summer. I mean, Mikal Bridges has been great. There were some worries about his jump shot in the first game against Celtics. He's been great. So it's more so the trade that we did in September for Karl Anthony Towns and moving Julius Randle and DiVincenzo to Minnesota. That's the trade that sticks in my mind because Randle was not only a great scorer on the inside, but he also helped with the spacing a lot. He was also a great playmaker, averaged around somewhere in between 3 and 4 assists last season when he was on the floor. So I'm wondering, I'm thinking it was when the Knicks had, think about last January, in January of this year.
They were amazing.
It was a healthy Randle. It was Hartenstein Hartenstein leaving, obviously that can't be understated how bad that was for the Knicks. But Hartenstein, oh, I see you waving your hand, Brody. Brody's a OKC fan, which is...
Oh, lucky him.
Yeah. Well, that should be treasonous. You're living in New York, Brody. You got to be a Knicks fan.
How are you rocking a Yankee hat and you're an OKC fan? Those two things just don't correlate at all.
Yeah. But, we'll let that be for now. But going back to what I was saying is in January, that Knicks team, before Randle got injured because, a certain Miami Heat player was malicious, that's what I believe. But before Randle got injured, that Knicks team was wiping the floor with their competition. They were best on offense. They were best on defense. They beat the defending champion at the time, Denver Nuggets, in a blowout by 27 points.
Yeah, it was close to 30.
Yeah, yeah. And so that was when they had Hartenstein, healthy Randle, OG was a brand new addition, Brunson playing great, obviously, DiVincenzo, and Hart coming off the bench. The depth from that time period, really when Hartenstein left, that's when, and the Mikal Bridges trade, that really affected this team's depth. And now I think we're, again, it's early, but I feel like we're very top heavy. And I also feel like the new additions are going to take some time to, as you both said, to gel. And what I'm worried about is the rotation with players already getting injured. I saw Brunson head into the locker room after it looked like he tweaked. I think it was he landed the wrong way.
Was it his knee?
Yeah, it may have been his knee. And went to the locker room, he came out fine temporarily. But what I'm thinking is that's worrying that this early in the season we're not as deep as we were last year. The spacing isn't as good. The chemistry isn't as good. And you already have players who are starting to feel kind of creaky in how healthy they're feeling. I mean, Josh Hart was listed as questionable before last night's game, and he ended up playing, but then he sort of re-injured himself. And so I'm just wondering how this team is going to kind of find their footing, because right now it just seems very up and down, and I'm not sure if we can recreate that January magic. Even with a healthy Mitchell Robinson, I'm not sure if we can recreate that magic from this past January with this current construction of the roster.
I fully believe that we can. I am I'm a mixed fan when it comes to Julius Randle. Some days when he goes for 30, I'll be the happiest guy on the planet. But the other 81 games a year, I can't stand him. He is not a team player. He does not play defense. He doesn't know how to play defense. Every time his off-the-ball defense is him just staring.
Yeah.
Backdoor cuts are prevalent.
Yeah.
When he's there.
Yeah.
He passes the ball as a as a number one option on a team, you can't have three assists. You should be able to swing the rock, move the ball. And his shot selection is terrible. Fade away threes when with 20 seconds left on the shot clock, that's not acceptable. That's not how you play Knicks basketball, it's not how you play team basketball, and that's not how you're loved in a city like New York. That's just incorrect. I'm happy we got rid of him. For the past 2 years, even when we were making the playoffs, I was the first advocate to trade him. The one that hurts the most is DiVincenzo by far. He is the one. He was the three, a little D, but mostly the three ball is what we need right now. And I feel like we don't have the confidence to shoot that ball.
But you have to give him credit for the way he was playing before he went down was the best basketball of his Knicks career. Can we agree on that?
100%. Yeah. But okay. I feel like in general, that wouldn't have lasted. Because he is not a person. Brunson coming into that shell. Brunson wasn't in his full form until towards the end of the year. Brunson coming into a shell, Randle wouldn't be able to hand over the crown. He has this LeBron ego. He has this ego and complex in him that wouldn't allow him to be able to say, okay, this is Jalen Brunson's team now.
Yeah.
This isn't my team anymore.
Yeah.
I completely agree. When Brunson was named captain over the summer and Julius Randle was still on the team, I was shocked. I knew right away that Julius Randle was not going to really accept that, especially going back, what was it, 2 seasons ago when he was getting technicals. It felt like every single game. I think there was a week where he got 5 technicals. That's just not a team player. And I think with Kat in this lineup now, I think the atmosphere on this team is going to grow really nicely. He's already taking a lot of responsibility. He's said to the media, he's like, well, I'm going to rewatch the films. I feel like this is my fault. I'm going to grow into this team because I came into this team. It's not being built around me. And I think just as soon as Karl Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson learn their communication style on the court, this team's going to go from like whatever they are right now to scary good. It's just they need to find that click. And I really think that's going to happen tonight. Even with, I saw Josh Hart is still questionable today. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Well, he usually, as you guys know, if he can play, he'll be out there.
He'll be there for
48
minutes.
And he'll put his body on the line every single night. And that's Knicks basketball right there. You know, he reminds me, I'm not sure if you guys would go back this far to agree with me, but I'm not sure if you've ever seen the highlights of Anthony Mason back in the 90s with the Knicks.
Yeah.
That's who Josh Hart reminds me of very much.
I like that. That's a good comparison.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm encouraged by Kat's attitude. But what worried me is against Cavaliers on Monday night, he only took 8 shots. So I'm wondering, is that Towns being too timid, or is that on Brunson for not feeding him the ball and not properly kind of leading the offense, you know, coming down the court?
I think it's a little bit of both. Because when you're in a Knicks uniform, there's always going to be scrutiny. And I feel like it's a little bit of him being a little cautious, a little worried. But also I feel like it's the point guards plural, because you have Jalen Brunson, you have Deuce McBride, and I think that's and campaign sometimes running at Tyler Kolek.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a little bit of them not being able to figure out how he plays his game, because he's a big piece. And they have to form this bond between Brunson's style of play and also Towns' style of play. So it has to be able to work both ways. They have to be complementary to each other. They have to be a well-oiled machine for it to work out perfectly.
I completely agree. You took the words right out of my mouth. And I was seeing after the Cavaliers game, Tibbs was saying that he wants Kat to be able to make these plays on his own. But I just don't think Kat's there as a Knick right now. I think he's there basketball IQ 100%. He can make the right choices on the court. But with this Knicks team, he needs to, as I was saying before, I think just the communication needs a lot of work. And as soon as that is done, there'll be like flawless basketball. But until then, I think it's, yes, on Jalen Brunson, but it's also on Karl Anthony Towns. And he just needs to, like, trust that he knows the game and that he'll be able to take some of his spunk and bring it to New York, and it'll mend nicely here.
I hope your optimism becomes a reality, because I'm a bit worried right now, but obviously this is still a very talented team, and I trust Leon Rose's construction of the roster, of the players. And also just briefly, George, you mentioned Deuce McBride. He's been great.
I love He's Deuce McBride. Great. He's my favorite. I saw that if Josh Hart doesn't play, he'll start tonight. And I'm a little scared to see him start, but his numbers are just great. I think his three-point numbers, which is what the starters are missing right now, is incredible. And getting that quick start is just what the Knicks are missing. And that's why I have the Knicks winning tonight against the Heat, because they'll be able to get that if Deuce is in that starting five.
One thing that Deuce brings is a different type of energy. He brings the spunk, he brings the flair, he brings the grit, he just adds flavor to that lineup in every which way.
So, are you thinking a win tonight, George?
Oh yeah. Every night the New York Knicks play basketball, I think a win.
I also just think the Heat haven't really changed up anything as of late, whereas the Knicks are. They're young. They found their like core. They know what's important to them. They are figuring out what worked. They had yesterday off. I trust that Kat took that time to watch all the films like he said he did, recognize his mistakes that he made. I think he's going to have an explosive offensive game. And as I said, the defense is great. I'm not worried about that at all. And Jimmy Butler hates playing against the Knicks. I think the Knicks are easily going to take tonight.
Yeah, I get the Knicks by 12, 15, something, solid number.
Okay. Well, the Knicks play the Miami Heat tonight at 7:30, and
you're gonna be there, Ben.
I will not be.
You're flying out to Miami right after.
Yeah, that'd be if I had a nice private jet.
Only a three-hour flight. Yeah, you can make it.
Yeah, I could. You know, South Beach is nice. Nice area. But the Knicks are on a long road trip, or not too long, but a substantial road trip. They got the Heat tonight, as we mentioned. The Detroit Pistons this Friday. And then Monday, November 4th at Houston, playing the Rockets. Then Wednesday, the 6th of next week, the Atlanta Hawks. And then they come back next Friday at home, Friday, November 8th, versus the Milwaukee Bucks. Definitely another Eastern Conference rival. So, you know, these next few road games are going to be, I think, a test of more of what we were talking about, the chemistry, the ability to be cohesive on the court together. But I want to get into some other great teams, particularly in the East, that we've seen. The Boston Celtics, I mean, I think it's hard to not admit that they're the best team in the league right now. They're the defending champs, and they're acting like they're the defending champs. Tonight they play the Indiana Pacers. The Celtics are 4-0. They're undefeated right now. I'm just wondering, you know, do you think this is just a honeymoon to start out the season? Or do you guys think that this is just going to be another dominant, you know, run right through the league kind of year? Which I think is terrible for the league, by the way. I think, you know, that when the Celtics are good, it's just, you know, we've seen that. We've seen that story before. You know, we want to see different teams come out of the East. And I don't want to see the Celtics dominate for 5 years and have it be a LeBron-like run. But a part of me in the back of my head worries that it could be that way, because this core is pretty young. So I'm thinking, what do you think of their start, and can they sustain it?
Just talking about this team makes me nauseous. I can't stand the Boston Celtics. I can't stand the Celtics. Can't stand the Red Sox. Can't stand the Patriots. Everything Boston.
I sense a theme.
Everything Boston just gets to me.
Yeah.
And watching them beat up on my Knicks by 23 points, and what are they? They made 29 threes, 29 for 61 from three. What? There's no other way to put it.
Yeah.
What is going on?
Yeah.
This isn't prime Clay and Steph. This is Luke Kornet, Al Horford, and Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah. They're kind of constructed in the way the Warriors are. And I hated the Warriors when they were in that dominant stretch, especially with Kevin Durant. And they're reminding me of the Warriors of the East right now. And I think, you know who I think the Knicks comparison is? If the Celtics are the Warriors from the late 2010s with Curry, with Draymond, with Clay, with KD, then the Knicks are the Houston Rockets with Chris Paul and James Harden. Now, I know it's not obviously a direct comparison, but the Knicks are, the story will be this year is, are the Knicks going to be the runner-up, forever the runner-up, or are they going to take it to this Celtics team? Because Leon Rose constructed this roster. He got players like Mikal Bridges to be the Celtics stoppers. I didn't see that. I didn't see that on Wednesday night. Looks like we got the ultimate Celtics fan here. Cannot stop bragging about it at every chance he gets. But he has to give his input. So Chaz McAdams is now here from back in the studio. Chaz, what do you have for us?
So I just heard you. Did I just hear you correctly to say, and I don't have headphones on, so I have to turn my mic off to hear you talk. Did I just hear you say the Knicks are constructed as Celtics stoppers?
That's how they, I mean,
we'll get there one day. No, mark my words. Next matchup, we'll get there one day. I promise. Mark my words right here.
So as they were constructed before the Karl Anthony Towns trade, I would have agreed with you. But after the Cat trade, I don't even think it's close. I think the Celtics washed the Knicks.
I think it's just the time that it's going to take for the Knicks to get back. Like, Ben, as you were saying before, getting back to that prime January form that we were seeing. And it's just losing these first couple games is heartbreaking for the Knicks. And the Celtics have gone this crazy streak. I think it's going to be hard to bounce back and kind of get back on their groove there.
Yeah, I do want to note that that what Chaz said is kind of, you know, it's a worrying thought for me because he may be right. But we'll see if he is right. But I think it's also important to note that the Knicks struggled to start out last season. And they were kind of just a couple of games over 500. It wasn't until around Christmas and then, as we said, into January when they began to really get into a groove there. So we'll see what happens with that. But then we also got to talk about the Cavaliers. The Cavs have been great. Now, the Cavs also, they've had many stretches in the regular season the past 2 years where it's looked like they're unstoppable, particularly on the offensive end. And look, even though the Knicks lost last night, I still think the Knicks own the Cavs. The Knicks literally, like the Cavs are just come playoff time.
They're not going to keep up.
Another thing you have to look at is their four games that they've played. They've played the Raptors, the Pistons, and the Wizards before the Knicks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are three lottery teams.
I think that the Cavaliers are really riding on this Donovan Mitchell contract that they got going on. You know, he's in Cleveland to stay. And that's just such like a huge confidence boost for this team. It helps build trust along with other teammates. So I think they're kind of in the same honeymoon phase as we were talking about with the Celtics just a minute ago. But them beating the Knicks was a huge test for them, even though they were playing some easy teams before. Playing a championship caliber team who's predicted to go far in the playoffs is insane early on in the season. But I don't know. It's just, as you're saying, this is a theme we see with the Cavs all the time. It's just going to, time will tell.
And one thing is that this Cavs team is, they've played together. They have a lot of the same guys from last year, Jared Allen, Isaac Okoro, Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Max Strus, just to name a couple. They have that chemistry, and they were up against the Knicks team who doesn't have that chemistry yet. And I think the next time that they meet, the Knicks are going to wash right through them. They'll
be together by then.
Yeah, they're going to throw them into the wash machine and then take them right out. It's not even a comparison.
I hope so, but let's take a trip over to the West and see what's going on there. I mean, you talk about the top teams in that conference from last year. Obviously, the Mavericks came out. They had a Cinderella run, in my view, to come out of the West. They were, I think, a dark horse to make the NBA Finals, and they did. I don't see that happening again this year. I think that was a kind of lightning in the bottle, so to speak, from Dallas. But I really think when you look at the young teams, particularly the Thunder, I think the Thunder are ready for prime time this year, especially...
They're here to stay, especially, most definitely.
Yeah, especially with Hartenstein. I hate it. It's funny. I hate that the two teams that are probably going to run the West this year are the two teams that have former Knicks players and got them via trade or free agency. Hartenstein should have never went to the Thunder. He should have took that deal. But NBA players, you know, they want more tens of millions of dollars. I guess 3 years on like $77 million wasn't enough for Hartenstein. He wanted more of to rub his hands together and get his money's worth, which I think is, you know, just greedy. But OKC has really just a well-rounded young athletic roster. You know, they've further built on what they had last year. They've still got SGA, of course, and now they got iHeart, and they also have
J-Dub.
Yeah, they've got Chet, obviously. So when I look at this OKC team, I think it's going to be them, and also I think the Timberwolves, simply due to the star power of when you look at what they've added with DiVincenzo, and also with Randle, that's not even the main players when you think of the Timberwolves. So when I think of the Timberwolves right now, obviously, you know, I think of the Jordan lookalike in terms of how he plays on the court, Anthony Edwards. I think his talent is just he's going to will them to, I think, a one or a two seed in the West, especially with the additions.
Oh, most definitely.
With the additions they have.
Anthony
now.
Edwards is mini Michael Jordan. I've seen the comparisons. I've seen the side by side videos. He plays just like MJ. A little not as aggressive on the defensive end as MJ, but he's there. And I think this season is a Shea MVP campaign, most definitely.
I think just going back to the Thunder really quickly, I was not surprised to see them go 3-0 at all. I knew they were going to be a dominant team this season. It's the first time they're 3-0 since 2016. And I was like looking at some coach interviews after their game the other day, and their head coach was saying that they have this really unique groove right now, that as long as they're working together like how they are, they're going to keep this streak going, that it's not a phase, that this is who they are, and this will become the norm for them to play with all their might every single game. I think that's a really cool thing to hear from a coach, especially if you're a new player on this team like Isaiah Hartenstein. Just easily fitting in with this team is impeccable work. And then, you know, heading over to Julius Randle's new team, I think the vibe that Randle has with Edwards is crazy good. I was not expecting them to mend well together at all, considering how Brunson and Randle did not really work full potential together. But I was really surprised to see how amazing this team really started off. And again, they're clicked right away. I find that absolutely crazy. So I'm excited to see these two teams go further in the season and see what stops them, what their issues will be, because right now I really cannot predict any.
Yeah, and one thing going back to that Timberwolves team, I think they have to start using Rob Dillingham. I think he's completely legit. He's one of the faces of the future of the league. The way he plays basketball fits in modernly, perfect with the way that the game is played right now, and he hasn't gotten a minute on the court, and they really need to start utilizing him, because right now they're 2-2. They have a tough test against the Nuggets tomorrow, Friday night. Then they have a little bit of a break. Then they go and play, they have a long break. Wow. They have no real competition until the Suns. But I feel like if they still are finding challenges against the weaker teams, they have to figure out a way to move around the rotation a little better. Because right now they have the same six guys playing, and they've been losing games.
Yeah, I think another great point you guys made. I think another interesting team to look at in the West, and you guys may disagree, is I think the Lakers are kind of a dark horse and how good they'll do this year in the regular season, and you know, how far can they make it to the playoffs? You know, some people they have them just on the outside. Actually, most experts.
They're a playing team.
You think so?
Yeah, they're not getting a real seed. They don't have the legs behind them to last. LeBron, as the season goes, LeBron's gonna be playing less and less games. He doesn't have it in him anymore the same way he did it once. I think this might be one of his last. This is his last season. If not, next season's his last season. He really just wanted to be able to say, "Oh, I play with Bronny." Did that? They checked in for the 30 seconds or whatever. Now Bronny's gonna go and be sent to the G League. He's gonna be banished to the Shadow Realm over there. This is the Lakers aren't legit.
I disagree. I have this team heading into the playoffs. Definitely the play-in. We'll see how that run goes. But this offense is kind of great. They're averaging 117 points per game right now, I think. And I know it's only three, four games into the season, but the beginning's really important. You can't slip and slide like how other that worse teams are doing. The only issue I have with this Lakers team is the defense. I feel like their offense can bounce back from the lack of defense, but the other teams are going to really take advantage of them, just like the Cavaliers are. The Cavaliers have this insane defense and offense. The Lakers only have half of that. So I think once they like find these actual caliber teams, it's going to be really difficult for them to keep up with them.
That's a good comparison, comparing them to the... They are essentially the Cavs of the West. I like that. It's they do have the offense. Their defense isn't it. LeBron has never been a stellar defensive player throughout his career.
Well, earlier in his career, when he put in effort.
When he put in effort and when he actually cared about what happens and then just care about prolonging his career to play with his son, which is another reason why he is by far no means the best player of all time because he stopped caring.
Well, we could talk about that for an hour.
That's a long conversation.
I'm putting that out there, leaving it right there. MJ still the best of all time.
That's a podcast in and of itself.
But
I'm also curious about the Clippers, Lakers crosstown rival. They've also started playing in their brand new arena. I believe it's called the Intuit Dome, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And that's in Englewood. It's near SoFi Stadium. SoFi is also pretty new. But aside from how the Clippers are doing as a team, I've seen some pictures videos of being inside this new arena. It looks really cool. Modern experience. But the Clippers, I think it's a question of with Kawhi Leonard, it's like we're used to at this point, really since his Raptors run in 2019, he's not going to – the regular season is not a priority for Kawhi. And he kind of – to me, that he's part of – even though he's a sublime talent, I just think that he's part of the problem with the modern NBA in that the players, they want to do load management. They don't want to play some important regular season games that fans have paid money to go to. And that used to not be the norm in this league. I respect the players who give it their all night in and night out. That isn't to say that, the amount of injuries in the NBA couldn't be reduced. I think if we actually reduced the schedule in the NBA from 82 to 66, I actually think that'd be a good thing because that would help with viewership because even though there'd be less games, more people would be tuning in to those games.
Because they're more important.
Yeah,
definitely.
And so I think we definitely need some reform on that. And also with referees, I think maybe it's just me, but around 10 years ago when I was in middle school, I remember watching an NBA game, and you'd be upset with some calls, but they generally wouldn't alter the outcome of an important game or a playoff game. The officiating from referees, I think, I don't know if it's just because they can't keep up with the pace of today's game, because today's pace is very fast, but the officiating has taken a steep decline. And I'm the biggest opponent of AI. I think it's horrible. I think it's probably going to end all mankind. But I also think we might need AI refs because the officiating has gotten so bad, and we need the AI in the MLB for the umps. That can easily be done, and they need to do that, I think. But what do you guys think of that proposal? You think it's out of left field or reasonable?
No, I don't think so. I think, going back to your baseball, they had the AI umps in the minor leagues this past summer. Did not get cleared, obviously. It's still being worked on, but I don't think it's a bad idea. I think the pace definitely has increased, but I wouldn't blame that considering they have how many refs per game, like what, four, right? So there's always someone watching somebody. I don't know. I was reading an article earlier. I forget which team it was. It might have been the Celtics, but so many calls were missed and the athletes were getting angry. And these are guys that, rarely show emotion when they don't get a call their way. So just seeing like the players who are so like held together really lose it over these calls being missed is kind of just very eye-opening as a fan, and also just, writing about it and like talking about it, like, here we are now. It's a quick change of game. I think the NBA could benefit from trying to implement and like having a half and half type thing, maybe using the AI as like a challenge, like using that to instead of like humans to overturn it, but we'll see what the future holds.
There's a happy medium for it. You can't remove the human aspect from that at all. That's just what sports are. Sports are humans playing a sport. They're gonna make mistakes. It's just how it is. And I do believe that in some aspects you need robot umps, because some of these calls have been diabolical. The other night,
love that term.
The other night there were two calls, ground balls thrown to first. Ump called them both out. They're both safe.
These World Series umps are also just horrible. I need to go on that rant really quickly.
They're completely brutal.
Okay. Sorry to cut you off.
There was that one Gleyber Torres strike call.
Strikeout really bothered me.
The ball was at his chin. In what world is that a strike?
All right, back to basketball.
Yeah, we got to stick on that. But there's happy medium. It's sports. There are going to be human errors. You can use AI to overturn calls. I don't believe that they should be implemented full time, taking over all of it.
Because also, would you just have a robot rolling up and down the court? Like, what would that look like?
What are you going to use, the new Tesla robot?
I think it would just be through a camera. You wouldn't even need to move
like have
the robot.
A drone, you think?
Yeah, like a drone. Okay. Yeah.
They already have those.
Yeah.
There's still going to be room for error. Nothing's ever going to be perfect yet.
Exactly.
And complete perfection is never the way sports
should be played.
Mistakes
are like what makes the game
so
exciting.
Yeah, completely.
I guess you're right, but I think something really needs to change.
I'd like to see a change with the reffing, because it has been really bad, especially this season to start off. And it'd be nice to see like a solution.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've noticed in the teams I root for, the Knicks, the Mets, they're all anti-New York, these refs. And the broadcasters too, by the way. Don't get me started on the broadcasters.
Everyone hates New York, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
Like, we're so
like,
nice.
You should hate Philly.
Yeah, no,
exactly.
Hate Philly, hate Boston. Especially Boston. That's going out to Chaz back in there.
Yeah.
Especially Boston.
Speaking of Philly, how about the 76ers getting fined $100,000 for Joel Embiid?
Joel Embiid should never step foot on a basketball ever again. I can't stand that man.
Yeah.
He took down Mitch.
Yeah, I think he should be.
There's forever bad blood with Joel Embiid.
Yeah, I think he should be charged with assault for what he did.
I agree.
He's literally out until January for his second surgery. He was back for a week.
Yeah, well, that's what you get when you try to trip. And he's out. Mitchell Robinson is out until January because of the complications from Joel Embiid.
He should never step foot on a basketball ever again. If he should never step foot in the Garden ever again.
Yeah.
How has James Dolan not banned him from the Garden is my question.
Yeah.
He bans everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Charles
Oakley. I have a funny story about that too.
Hopefully you were not banned.
Oh, no,
George.
I wasn't banned from the Garden.
Okay, good. Good. We
can never go to the Knicks game.
Yeah.
I would be detrimental.
But I think that'll just about wrap things up for this week's episode of Pick and Pod. I'm Ben along with my co-hosts Lauren and George. We'll see you next week, you'll have new co-hosts next week, but that was Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.